The State of the State Tribe Speech in the Capitol is an important event. It allows the leaders of 11 Wisconsin tribes to talk to elected officials about their issues. So Wisconsin I is very grateful that three of those leaders have come in to talk about both the speech and the issues in their communities. I want to thank, to my left, Gary Bisoff, former chairman of the Menominee Tribe, who will be giving today's State of the State address, Shannon Holsey, president of the Stockbridge-Muncie community, and Jason Schlender, vice chairman of the La Coudere Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Thank you very much for coming in, all
Thanks
of you.
For having us.
Gary, you're going to give an overview of the state of all 11 tribes. So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes, each of you, please. Gary, the state of the Menominee.
Well, the Menominee have several environmental struggles. We'll start with that. One being the proposed Aquila open pit sulfide mine on the Menominee River, which is the interstate boundary between Upper Michigan and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So we are concerned about that, as well as the mining moratorium repeal. And we also have some concerns with some of the proposed wolf hunting and some of the other wetlands reduction in state oversight. So those are some of the bigger environmental pieces. But the tribe is also looking at continuing to work forward with the State Tribal Relations Committee. It's a special study committee of the Joint Legislative Council. So we have many pieces within that that we think are going to benefit us. So we're hit and miss on several different topics, and part of that is covered in today's speech.
Okay, those are important issues. Shannon, your view of your community?
Well, as far as the state of the Stockbridge-Muncie Tribe, we are Mohicans, and we are alive and well, contrary to what some people think. And we are thriving, and we're always looking to ways, obviously, as former Chairman Bisoff had expounded on, environmental issues are very, it's just not a Menominee issue, it's not just a Native American issue, it's a collective issue among all of us. And so we always look to be good stewards and good partners, and look to ways to, in a bipartisan way, to look to other, our legislators to come to reasonable resolution as it relates to environmental protections. Obviously, we're always looking for ways to economically expand, to provide resources, to well-needed resources to my people. And obviously, we always look to ways to provide extended educations to them in post-secondary and all of those other things. So we're doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jason, please.
Yeah, so over La Coudere, we're Ojibwe. So one of the things that we're doing for 2018 is we're rebranding. We're formerly known as the La Coudere, or the LCO Casino Lodge and Convention Center. We're now rebranded starting in June as the Seven Winds Casino and Conference Center. So we look forward to, you know, unveiling that in June. We had a soft opening last month. So economic development is one of our priorities in generating revenue for the band. We're also in the forefront of our culture and language revitalization with Wadu Kadading and our tribal school. We invest in that, and also we're all of us, as mentioned by President Holsey and former Chairman Bisa, is the environmental issues that we encounter, that we deal with as co-managers of the resource. So we're concerned about the environment as a whole. You know, it's controversial for La Coudere, being that, you know, we are contracted with Enbridge and an oil company, but it was more about protecting, utilizing the law for our benefit. And so there's a lot of misconceptions about that, but we still hold true to our pride of the Ojibwe. We honor the earth as we have always done. But looking forward, some other environmental things too is CWD with the deer herd in Wisconsin. It's a vital resource for us, a staple of our diet. So we're concerned about that, and how the state can work with us as tribes to manage the resource, and also our manume and our wild rice, and you know, things like that, where that we're, you know, our treaty rights are, you know, our and our treaties mean everything to us. So that's what we, that's what we're going to move forward doing, and you know, we look forward to a great 2018.
Can I ask about state tribal relations now that the Walker administration has been in office for about 8 years? I want to ask each of you, are state tribal relations generally in a good place, or could they be in a better place? Start with you, Jason, and then we'll come back the other way.
Well, I think it's always, there's always work to be done, you know, as far as generating stronger relationships. But I think our relationship with the state has, it's a working relationship, and we have, we have avenues and a network so that we can work with the legislature and with the governor to, so we can have a place, a seat at the table, so that we can work on things that are viable and constructive and progressive. So there's always work to be done to strengthen that, and that's what we look forward to doing.
But you feel that you have a place at the table in some of these important issues, sir?
Yeah, I think so. Our tribal council and the network that we've developed with other tribes, and you know, with the legislature, with the assembly, and in different governing capacities, I think we've developed a strong relationship so that we can, we can continue to get work done.
Okay, thank you. Shannon, your thoughts on state tribal relations?
I think it's at a good place in that, as Jason sort of expounded on, and in terms of, I think it's all about communication and how one communicates that need. I think tribal leadership is extremely, they're not adversarial, but they're extremely successful in that they recognize that there needs to be outreach to our not only our local representatives, but also to develop and foster that relationship with the Department of Administration and the governor. You know, we've found that it's more helpful to the tribes if we align with what the priorities are set by the state, so that we can align our needs. As Jason said, obviously things are not without challenge, but the tribal leadership has no problem, especially through consultation and other mechanisms, to bring those issues forward. And as Jason has said, work on solutions that are resolution-based and that are going to help not only the tribal nations, but the state of Wisconsin. Tribal nations have duality. They're not only just citizens of the state of Wisconsin, but they're citizens of their tribal nations, and they run small governments themselves. So they understand the bureaucracy that's associated with it. So I think they're very effective in that. And of course, we're going to agree to disagree sometimes, but that doesn't mean we don't exercise decorum and professionalism as it relates to that.
And Gary, I suppose the whole subject of state tribal relations is going to be a key part of your speech. So give us a short version. is it in a good place, sir?
Let me couch it in this. In 2004, then Governor Doyle had put together Executive Order 39, which mandated consultation between the executive cabinet agencies of Wisconsin with the tribes. We would like that, and to this day, the Walker administration honors that. So we have those consultations with the tribes, whether it's yearly, and in the case of DHS, DCF, DOT, DNR, it's several times a year, even quarterly. So we've seen some improvements in that communication piece. We also have, and I mentioned this before, the Special Committee on State-Tribal Relations, which is a study committee of the Joint Legislative Council. And that's a fairly progressive approach to trying to resolve issues regarding Native American concerns in the state, Native American tribal concerns. So the committee has a member of each tribe available for it on that study committee, and we typically will promulgate legislation that then can make its way or not through the system. And the thing we understand is there are certain things, if we want success, certain things have to be negotiated out to be able to to pass into law. And quite frankly, certain things we know will not make it through. Okay. So those we believe we can move in this administration, we are trying to move forward. So we've seen progress here. We've seen some positive things. And I would make sure during today's talk to recognize that, because it's not all gloom and doom. There are some positives, but on the environmental front, for one of those, we have concerns.
Well, and which leads me to my final question. In your speech, are you going to ask the Assembly and Senate to pass any specific one bill, sir?
Well, one of the things we're looking at is with the Indian Child Welfare Act, and that's the federal law, and the state law is the Wisconsin Indian Child Welfare Act. So they're called WICWA for Wisconsin and ICWA for the feds. And we're trying to make sure that we can honor the responsibilities of those laws when we work with the Safe Haven law that also looks at, and Safe Haven looks at providing anonymity when a child is given up. What we try to do is also find a place where we can identify those tribal members who may be given up within the process and still protect the anonymity. So we're having a struggle with that right now through legislation. So we'll ask for assistance with that. And of course, we're going to ask for a reconsideration of several of the environmental laws to start with. But there are some that are still in action. Remember, this year's legislative sessions will end soon, but they actually go into March. So we're going to ask for some final votes on several pieces also in there.
Other part of this debate is tribal and federal relations. We're a little bit beyond a year into the first year of the Trump administration. Have you detected as tribal leaders any major shift in federal-state relations? Shannon, I think it's your turn to go first.
Obviously, there's complexity to that, you know, and as tribal nations, you have to navigate that world where you're dealing with multiple, you know, obviously, there's sovereignty, and obviously there's the exercise of that sovereignty with the federal government and their trust and treaty obligations to that, but also the recognition that, you know, especially as Gary expounded on earlier about environmental protections, sometimes those issues become commingled because there's always the question of whether or not where the authority lies, whether it's in federal jurisdiction or state jurisdiction, and that's sort of the crux of the argument as it relates to the permitting issues, you know. The tribal nations are taking the position that it is a federal issue and that it shouldn't be left to the state because it has resounding effect on that, but also the trust and treaty responsibility that is collated with that. So obviously, you know, it depends. And he had said about Indian child welfare, but there's complexity in that there are state laws or ordinances that are applicable as well as federal. So I'm sure you can look at any one of our governments. We have constitutions, we have tribal ordinances and laws that we follow, and it's very complex because you have to look at that balance of both state and federal and how you navigate that.
Okay. Correct me if this is an unfair question. Is the Trump administration, do you feel, as supportive of your issues and your causes as the Obama administration? Gary, what do you think? You're a veteran here.
I think there's potentially a misunderstanding of our identity and our concerns. I don't know if there is that same communication with the Obama administration. For instance, in some of the takes we've gotten from the Trump administration, a lot of their movement is towards federalism. So that's giving the power from the federal government to the states,
yes,
and in many cases to the tribes. Well, here's the rub for tribes. When block funding, for instance, or in our case with the Back 40, it's wetland permit process authority is given to the state. What happens is the states then come back and say, well, you know, we never signed a treaty with you. We have no treaty or trust responsibilities with you. You had that with the federal government.
Sure.
And if the federal government is giving those authorities to the states, then there's you know, our trust has diminished. So we're trying to work through that process and figure out a way where, if indeed the Trump administration wants to help us, because we are strong economic engines in rural Wisconsin and rural America. If he wants to help rural America, he's got to find a way to help us that does not hurt us. And maybe right now we're still fine-tuning it. I hope that's what it is.
Jason, are you concerned about this issue of devolution of authority from the federal government to the states, sir?
Well, obviously, I think it's, you know, there's, we would always try to maintain our government-to-government relationship, and that's, I think that's what's important. And maybe that has been diminished a little bit with the Trump administration because, you know, right away with, I can't just help but think about, you know, the first thing that that President Trump did in his first action was to sign these executive orders that were really kind of in the face of a lot of the, you know, a pan-Indian movement that happened out in, you know, out in Standing Rock. And, you know, it was kind of really like right in our face. And for a lot of us that were there or that, you know, really invested our time and money into, you know, into standing together, he kind of just really kind of put that right in our face right away. Now, in fact, yesterday I was on a conference call with the, you know, with the BIA and BIE as far as, you know, with budgets and, you know, and the Trump administration is really pushing infrastructure, which is something that we need, but the issue, my concern is that for Wisconsin tribes, sometimes we're not on the priority list. And so how do we get that? How do we get, you know, our schools are in disrepair as much as any other tribal schools across the nation. So it's, you know, how do we attract the attention of the government that may not be as culturally competent as the Obama administration?
Are you worried about the message sent when the president scales back to protections of bears' ears?
Absolutely.
Me. Yes. Think that's send a troublesome signal?
Yeah, Jason? Absolutely. And it just going back to what I just said, you know, about being culturally competent and just having compassion and you know, and just being kind and caring about, you know, your constituents, you know. I felt that, you know, of course, you know, everyone is going to have their own, you know, their own personal views of every administration that has ever been in place that represents the United States of America. So, Obama administration, sure, not perfect, but really made an effort to reach out to tribes and to, you know, invite all of us to the table so that we could have a voice and a platform. And I haven't necessarily seen that yet with the Trump administration. And so, you know, even with the, even within the government, it's really, you know, you really start to become disenfranchised with what's happening with just the continuing resolutions and, you know, just the inconsistency as far as governance. Really not setting the a model, you know, so we kind of, you know, myself personally, we have to just stay, you know, secure within ourselves and make sure that, you know, our government is functioning, our schools, our healthcare facilities, our elders, our children are, you know, are taken care of.
So many key Washington appointments have not been made. Is there even a leader of the BIA? Has there been a director named, to
the
best of your knowledge?
Not.
There has not been.
No.
Okay. Not yet.
Okay. No, I just came from Washington, D.C. I was attending the National Congress of American Indians, and that was sort of the one thing that was discerning, because you really can't work with an agency if you don't know who's leading that agency. They can't set their priorities, and you can't have conversations if you are unaware of that. So it's not without challenge, and as Jason had said, it's creating volatility for everybody, whether intended or not. It creates that volatility, but it also, you know, my hope is with President Trump's administration that he uses this opportunity to educate himself. And you know, we the people means everybody. And it's not just specific to Native Americans. He has to have the pulse. In order to be a successful leader, as Jason had said, no matter who you are, you serve the entire country. And you have to have the pulse of the relevancy of the need in order to facilitate that.
We've mentioned economic development. A major state initiative is offering $4.4 billion in state and local incentives to Foxconn, which is a Taiwan, as you know, led organization, to come to Racine County. What's the reaction of you tribal leaders when you see that much money, 4.4, for Southeast Wisconsin, Racine County, for a foreign corporation? How do you react to that?
For me, I think it remains to be seen. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty and outstanding questions with regards to that, because you're talking about building substantial infrastructure just to support an external company to come to Wisconsin. I mean, certainly there's a cost of doing business, and the ROI, as I said, remains to be seen, because it just doesn't have, it's not as simple as is the return on investment and the benefit that it would have financially. There's also the ecology that one has to think about in terms of the taxation of the environment and the resources that will be used or not used, you know, and there are so many things that we need to support in the infrastructure. I believe in economic development, but I think that there has to be an analysis of the cost of that too, and it remains to be seen in terms of the cost on the backs of the Wisconsin taxpayers, which is all of us.
Can you foresee any circumstances by which a major Foxconn investment in Racine County will help your tribal members in terms of potential jobs or business contracts with Foxconn? Have tribes registered on the state website to how ways to interact from a business standpoint with Foxconn? Do you see any upside from Foxconn for your tribes?
Menominee has started those communications to see potentially. Most tribes have a large percentage of their population in urban areas. In fact, Milwaukee has a larger population than any of our reservations. So we understand that, and we look at the benefit that potentially could give to some of our tribal members. But I think the bigger picture, looking away for economic development, and it's not being an alarmist, but we believe we need to look at sustainability within our own communities, whether it's through the opioid crisis, creating our own tribal action plans, and really rallying all of our tribal programs and agencies to help put together a plan that we believe, culturally and otherwise, could work for us. But we also have to look at other types of green industry in other ways. So if the federal government is not prioritizing us, we have the infrastructure in place where we can take care of ourselves. So you'll see that with more and more tribes. And I think there are many more cooperatives, non-native cooperatives and communities that are also starting to think this way.
Jason, any PS on the Foxconn incentives?
Well, I think.
And any upside for?
Well, I think, its location, I'm not sure as far as outreach.
Yeah.
You know, because we're in the northern part of Wisconsin.
Yes.
So, you know, but, as former Chairman Busa stated, that a lot of our tribal citizens reside in these urban areas. So if that's an opportunity for them to gain employment and a skill set, you know, it's obviously a benefit to them. But also, as all businesses, as they flourish, they also reach out and invest, in, you know, whether that's through sponsorship or partnerships and things like that. There's always things in, you know, business endeavors that can be sponsored by, you know, companies or whatever, or sponsorships as far as tourism and investing in, you know, different parts of economic development. And also, just one, I like what Chairman Bisa mentioned as far as the opioid crisis. All of our tribal communities are deeply impacted by that, and it's just it taxes our resources. We don't have enough funding. You know, we don't have enough capacity or resources to treat that. The issue. So,
do you see the opioid crisis on your communities as the number one health issue for your communities, Shannon?
Well, For us, it's multifaceted. Obviously, it's of great concern. Right now, our population is aging. Unlike other native populations, a third of our populace are elders, and so their needs are far different in terms of many of them have diabetes, which is endemic, and which there's grave concern there. But the opioid crisis has no boundaries. It doesn't matter what reservation it's on. It's there, and it affects each and every one of us. As a matter of fact, the tribal leadership, with the support of the tribal leadership, we asked and implored Governor Walker to include the carve-out of money to build an adolescent wellness treatment center, which he did, and we are currently in process of creating a feasibility study and a business plan. But that's just a small need that obviously is a vast need. It's affecting us all, and I don't think that you can delineate it being a Native American issue or a non-Native. It's just a Wisconsin concern for everybody.
Are you going to mention in your speech today the opioid crisis?
Yes, we'll make some mention to it, but again, as you had heard, it's morphed. It on the Menominee Reservation, for instance, it had started out with synthetic marijuana. So then it had gone to the prescription drugs, which now, thank God, there are detriments in place to help stop the doctor shopping. So we see many of those on the prescription drugs and opioids now switching to something that's cheaper and easier to get, and that would be heroin and meth. Mm. So we see this struggle. We know it's an ongoing fight, and it's not just on our reservations.
Are you
it's
getting,
in surrounding counties.
Are your communities getting the resources, more resources, to deal with opioids and meth and all these other major health crises? Do you see the resources lining up? Gary,
well,
you want to go first?
We see, and we thank Representative Nygren and Lieutenant Governor Clefish for their work regarding the opioid crisis. One of the problems we've had is with all of the funding coming forward, for instance, if we're trying to apply and show need for some of the grant funding, well, some of the questions are things like, do you have a waiting list? Well, if we don't have a treatment center, we can't have a waiting list. So it doesn't look like we should. So there's a mismatch because we don't have the infrastructure, but by all means, our need is just as bad. So we see those pieces. The tribe has had to, just like I said, we had to come together, and each tribe now is making their own tribal action plan that looks at how do we internally do this? If there's not enough state or federal funding, how do we look at this ourselves? And then we try to supplement or build in where we can that federal money to support a systemic approach to getting at the problem.
So are there new programs emerging to deal with this health crisis, Shannon and Jason?
Sure, I think so. I think it was very beneficial from my perspective. This crisis has been ongoing and been an ongoing conversation among tribal leaders for many, many years. And obviously, we have health disparities in terms of, as former Chairman Bisa had said, with regards to resources. You're never going to have enough resources. So it's about strategically aligning and recognizing those things and working through the challenges as he spoke to. But obviously, you know, it's not going to be without challenge. But I think the sooner the state of Wisconsin recognizes that it is, and I think the governor has aligned some of his priorities and initiatives, as well as First Lady, in terms of that, you know, we're going to be all better off. But we are in crisis. It would be foolish of us to say that we're not. I mean, but it's a matter of that. But it's also a matter of tribal leadership determining our priority, too, because we have resounding need as well as in all healthcare issues. You know, we are our governments in ourselves, so we have our people, our constituents, as Jason had said, we have vast needs. So we provide education, we provide all of these things. And unlike what a lot of people think, you know, that Native Americans get free health care, there's nothing free about it. You know, one, it's a treaty and trust obligation, but the amount of money that's supplanted by tribal governments in order to operate and meet the needs of their constituents is far more than what we ever receive by any agency.
Jason, do you see signs of hope in the war on the opioid and meth epidemic,
well,
sir?
I think you got to be, I think if you're going to do anything, you got to be positive, you know, and you got to be an example of, you know, of progression, I guess. I think the other thing, what's important is to not compartmentalize the issue. I think all of those aspects of our government need to be bolstered, and so that includes our culture, our language, our health and wellness. You know, all of these things are all contributing factors to, you know, just an individual person that, you know, becomes addicted to, you know, just becomes a victim of addiction, period. Mm-hmm. So if you can bolster these, you know, these programs, and if our children are healthier, our families are healthier, you tend to find that those people tend not to hurt themselves and become victims of, you know, of addiction. So that's how I look at it, is addiction is anything. Whether you're addicted to meth or heroin, you could be addicted to food, you can be addicted to cigarettes, sugar, different things like that. So it's, to me, if I would, you know, I don't, you know, I stress to our council that it's not just an isolated issue of just opioids and methamphetamines. It's we have a communal issue here that has been affecting us for hundreds of years, and so that we have to focus on that. And the one sure thing that we have that has sustained us is our culture and our language, and that's the foundation of who we are. So if we don't lose that, we still gotta stick in the game, I guess. And so that's where a lot of our tribes in Wisconsin, all of our tribes in Wisconsin, have a strong foundation for that, and we support each other. And that's the other thing I think is important about this moment. The State of the Tribes address is an opportunity for all the tribes to celebrate our unity, and the different things that that the tribes accomplish. I think it's great, but I think we celebrate, you know, our the united front that we have, and the friendships and the networking that we have that we can build on.
My final question deals with kind of symbolic issues of respect for tribal leaders, tribal members. The Cleveland Indians baseball team announced that they're going to get rid of the chief logo next season, 2019 season, but the Washington Redskins still have that logo and they're still the Redskins. Do you feel as tribal leaders that tribal issues are getting more respect nationally, or are we just kind of sidestepping? You want to go first, Jason?
I would say that they're still sidestepping. And I think, I think Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians is a step in the right direction. But I think when the whole not your mascot campaign or not a mascot campaign is focused on the Redskins, because that's the one that is visibly damaging and just linguistically damaging to us, because just the name is just completely vulgar and it's not appropriate in any capacity. So Indians is kind of, you know, it's not culturally accurate either, but I think maybe whoever they are took a softer one to work with, and this is an easier one to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we look at it, you know, the tallest tree to take down is the Washington Redskins. So that's our focus moving forward. So,
thank you, Shannon.
Obviously, this is nothing new to Native Americans. We've experienced racism forever, since time immemorial. But I also look at it as anytime that we can get a platform and a voice, it also affords the opportunity to educate people and provide identity what large presence the 573 tribes have and the contributions that they've given to the United States and the rich diversity that is in all of us. Obviously, you know, there is uniqueness in all 573 tribes. You know, as Jason had said, you know, unity does not have to be uniformity, and there's uniqueness and rich diversity in each and every one of us. And anytime we get that platform, regardless of whether it has negative connotation, as Jason had said, I am not anybody's mascot. You know, I'm well resounded in who I am, but it's important from many different perspectives, because we're growing and we're teaching future generations. And so I think it is important. So at every opportunity, whether it be positive or negative, to make sure that we speak our truth.
Thank you. And Gary, last word on that question?
Yeah. You know, I had been an educator all my life. That was my role and is my role. The unwritten curriculum is the stuff that's not in the textbooks, but the message is given in the school systems. And if you have a type of belittling or a treatment of Native Americans as something in the past and not current and with you, that has impact. So while I might be able to understand and build up enough tough skin that I can deal with some of the homecoming parades and some of the terrible treatments of the Native mascots, I know immature kids cannot, and that's not fair to them. So on a couple different fronts, we see this coming. We will applaud that Chief Wahoo is gone and
going.
And we wait and going.
Going next
I should
season.
Say going. But I also know, I believe it's the district of Prescott is looking at being very positive and stronger in their approach to trying to convince school districts around them that they play in different various sports to rethink what they're doing when they use the mascots.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for update. I know you've got to get to the Capitol. I want to thank Gary Bisoff, former chairman of the Menominee Tribe, Shannon Holsey, president of the Stockbridge Muncie community, and Jason Schlender, vice chairman of La Couturier Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, for joining us. And you're off to the Capitol. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.